This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business and sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, August 23rd, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about Zoe Kravitz's new movie, Blink Twice. My name is Ben Pearson. I'm an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor BJ Colangelo.
Hi, hi, hiya.
All right, BJ, let's get into some general thoughts about this movie before we dive into spoilers. What did you think about Blink Twice?
Alrighty, so I had no idea what I was getting into with this movie, because admittedly I didn't see all that many ads for it, not a lot of trailers, so this was just sort of a request from you. You were like, do you want to check out this movie for us? And so then I watched the trailer and I was like, oh, I think I kind of know what this is. This is gonna be, you know, fun mystery sort of scary movie with rich people on like a beautiful island. I'm very down for that. And so then I sat down to watch this movie in a pre-screening. And for about the first third of this movie, I was like, okay, Zoe, I see what you're doing. This is fine, but like, shit or get off the pot. I don't know what we're doing here. And then the movie punched me in the face and I was like, oh, this movie is awesome. This movie kicks ass. I was not expecting this. I was not seeing the direction it was going to go into. And I have not stopped thinking about this movie since I've seen it.
Excellent. I loved this. I thought the messages in Blink Twice are not subtle at all, but in this case, I think that's a feature and not a bug.
Yes.
So I'd love to talk to you more about that as we get into it here. I thought the production design and the color palette particularly were super gorgeous, and I liked spending time in this world, even though it is revealed, as the trailer hints, to be kind of a hellhole, a hellscape at certain points. I thought the performances were pretty close to perfect across the board, and I came away extremely impressed that this is Zoe Kravitz's first movie. I would say that there are a couple of supporting characters that I wish were maybe a bit more fleshed out, But that's kind of it in terms of like small nitpicks in the grand scheme of things. That's pretty good, I think.
Absolutely. So. Like, she has such a strong narrative voice already. And the way that she is layering, not just like, this is a movie definitely about like red flags and, you know, a lot of those sorts of things, the things we ignore for the sake of like paradise or power or what have you. Because there are even just the building that this is shot at, and there's, I call it like the evil of symmetry, when like things look a little too perfect and a little too perfectly designed, like that in my brain is a warning bell of something is not right. Something is very much not right. Nothing is this like perfectly aligned and this symmetrical, and the fact that everybody has matching clothing, what the hell? Like, this is, that's not cool to me. Like, if I go to a resort and they're like, everybody wears a robe, I'm like, oh, so this is a sex cult, like something. Right. And so the fact that this movie is playing with all of those sort of like things that we know in the back of our head, but it doesn't ever like let us know what's really going on. It just is like, you know, something's off and we're going to let you sit here with how off this is. And yeah, like, so dazzled by everything in this. And one of my favorite Channing Tatum performances I've ever seen.
Yes, same. Yeah. Just to capitalize on, or sort of just to piggyback on what you're saying, the movie, I think, does such a good job of putting you in Naomi Ackie's character. Her name is Frida, putting us in Frida's headspace. Like, part of me wants her to just be allowed to relax and have a good time on this vacation, because we're all overworked and we all can relate to just wanting to check out and take a break from the indignities of having to work for a living. But the movie opens with Channing Tatum's character apologizing for some unspecified bad behavior. So you know right off the bat, like you're talking about with these red flags, that there's something wrong here. And it takes a while for the movie to fully reveal the truth. And once it does, it really levels up in a big way. So I agree. I think the movie does a great job of making you sympathize, empathize, feel with this main character. And then, it really turns up the dial as the movie goes on. So anything else you want to say before we get into spoilers, BJ?
I just absolutely love the cast that they've put together, because I think everybody is really doing great work here. And Alia Shawkat forever proves that she is like cinema's greatest like best friend. Like, she plays so many good best friend roles, and she deserves to be acknowledged for that, because it's not an easy role to fulfill, because you often feel like, oh, this character is being pushed aside as like second banana or whatnot. And she never does. She always commands those roles, and she's such an incredible supporting player. And I don't think that, you know, there should be a hierarchy between like lead performance or supporting performances, but like across the board, she is incredible. And this is a great example of it for her as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so let's get into spoilers. Let's talk about the juicy stuff here. So if you've not seen Blink Twice, I think BJ and I would definitely both recommend going out and seeing it. And maybe if you can, try to avoid any reviews or writing about the movie or anything. If this is your only exposure to the movie so far, maybe us talking about it right now in the trailers, then you're in for quite a ride. So check it out.
I will say one thing, because this is something that MGM did ahead of time, which I think is very cool of them. They did put out a trigger content warning on their socials, and I have been seeing reports that some theaters are putting the warnings either at their box offices or like printed out ahead of the theaters. I'm not sure if it's all online on like ticketing services, but
so mine was in the beginning. It was like a title card in the beginning of the movie.
Oh,
before
really?
The movie actually came up. Yeah, and I was going to ask you about this, because I can't remember another movie putting a trigger warning, a written trigger warning like that, like actually in the theater, up on the screen before the film plays. Like, obviously that's been a big thing in TV recently, and it's much easier to sort of slap that on in front of a streaming show like Baby Reindeer or whatever, right? But like, the idea that they're doing this in movies now, I don't know, I think this is the first time that I can remember this happening. I was just curious what you made of that.
Yeah, so I think it's twofold. I think one, they were definitely learning from the massive mistake that It Ends With Us made of, you know, promoting that movie that is ultimately about domestic violence, and being like, oh, it's like this fun rom-com with Blake Lively. And then a lot of people went into that and were like, why why was I not informed? This is what this movie's actually about. Because that's, if you're going in thinking you're getting a rom-com and you're walking out and it's about domestic violence, like that's a big thing. So I think they were learning from that mistake, number one. And then number two, I'm going to be writing a piece about sort of this sort of thing happening regarding Blink Twice that will be up, you know, probably later in the day, if not this weekend. But the way that I always view trigger warnings is like trigger warnings are like life jackets. We hope that you don't need them, but if the ship goes down, they're really nice to have. And so I'm not against them. Like, I have complicated feelings about trigger warnings in general, because the unfortunate reality is that everybody's triggers are different, and the things that set you off are going to be different. And there can be kind of this like slippery slope of like, well, if we're doing trigger content warnings for some things, but not everything, you know, where does the line between like responsibility of the film and the studios versus the responsibility of the consumer? Like, those are things that, you know, can get very, very tricky. That's why resources like doesthedogdie.com are, you know, great. Like, those are great resources that if people know that they are somebody who is sensitive to, you know, being triggered, it's always a good thing to do your own homework, figure out if this movie is right for you. So I get that. But because of how this movie plays out, which we'll talk into in spoilers, I had no idea that's where the movie was heading. And like, it is a very good thing. I was like, I'm a person who was healed enough from my own trauma that I can withstand this sort of thing. But that is not true for a lot of people. And yeah, because it was not in the marketing, or there's like no indication at all that this is where the movie goes, I think it was a really responsible decision for them to do that, because I've seen a lot of people who were like, oh man, I really wanted to see that in theaters, but I think I'm going to wait for it to, you know, rent on VOD at home so that I don't have to risk having a panic attack or crying or doing something in the theater, which like, it's not the movie's fault. That would have been my reaction. So I think this was, I think it was a good call. And I think if it's a situation where like, it's very clear that this is not part of the marketing, like there are some movies where it's like, you kind of know what you're getting yourself into if you're watching it. Like horror movies for sure. Like, you kind of, if you're watching a horror movie, someone's probably going to be brutally killed. Like, you know, these things. But certain depictions of violence that can be like very difficult, namely sexual violence, which this is movie has a trigger warning for. I don't think you expect going into a movie that there will be sexual violence. I don't think that that is something that people anticipate all the time. So I think that it was a good, responsible call on their part.
Yeah, I saw James Gunn on Threads, I think this was yesterday, he like sort of quote tweeted or quoted a Hollywood Reporter piece from a few days ago that the headline was, "It Ends With Us Should Have Warned Audiences Ahead of Time." And James Gunn took a screenshot of like the official rating information and said, "For all the grief that the MPAA gets, they do a pretty good job of letting people know why a film has its particular rating. If people are sensitive to particular themes, they should read the MPAA's rating before seeing a film. In this case, it ends with us. It's clearly labeled as being PG-13, quote, for domestic violence." So I don't know. I saw that and thought it tied in with what we're talking about here. So I just wanted to mention in case.
Yeah, for sure. That, and but. So, because the issue is, this is why it gets complicated, because I do agree with him in that regard. And the MPA did include it in the rating. However, I do have a copy of like a press thing or like an email blast that was sent out by Sony for It Ends With Us. And this is how they describe it. "It Ends With Us, the first Colleen Hoover novel adapted for the big screen, tells the compelling story of Lily Bloom, Blake Lively, a woman who overcomes a traumatic childhood to embark on a new life in Boston and chase a lifelong dream of opening her new business." And then it goes into like, you know, the relationship, blah, blah, blah. "When Lily's first love, Atlas, suddenly re-enters her life, her relationship with Ryle is upended, and Lily realizes she must learn to rely on her own strength to make an impossible choice for her future." Like, that is the language being used in like marketing blasts and like newsletters and the way that it's being described on websites. So if you go to like you know, whatever website, moviesaregood.com, what is the synopsis of this movie? That is the language that's being put up by Sony, and nowhere in there does it say domestic violence.
Right.
So, like, yes, the MPA is good, and, like, in that regard, they have a lot of problems, but, like, that is a good call that they made. But the majority of people, they're not actually looking at, like, what is it rated R for? They're using the, like, they're going off of the language that's being provided to them in plot synopsises and, you know, all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And so in that regard, it's like, I get it, but also they did kind of downplay it. Like, they intentionally downplay that this is a story about domestic violence.
Yeah.
And, you know, so again, complicated. It gets complicated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, like, where I ultimately come down on this right now, and who knows, maybe my opinion will shift, but I'm kind of like, okay, I'm cool with, like, waiting an extra 5 seconds or whatever at the beginning of the movie for that trigger warning to be up there for anybody who happens to need it to say, you know what, forget this. I either didn't know this, or I made a mistake, or I'm not in the right headspace to watch this or whatever. So I'm just going to go walk out and get a refund or whatever. And, like, it doesn't really, you know, I'm much more, it doesn't affect my life nearly as much as, like,
exactly,
wasting all the time watching 20 minutes of ads and stuff before the movie does. So, yeah, no harm, no foul, I say, but,
yeah, exactly. If you don't need it, then cool, ignore it. If you do need it, then it's a really cool resource that's available. Like,
yeah,
it's, I don't know why people get so up in arms about it. Like, it doesn't hurt you for it to be there. Like, if it don't apply, let it fly, you know?
I'm curious to see if other studios will sort of use this period as, like, a testing ground, and maybe this will become more of a normal thing. So stay tuned. I'm sure we'll talk about it more if that ends up happening. Actually, let's take a break, and then we'll get into spoilers for Blink Twice right after this.
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles, including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com/save50 today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/redcircle.
Fall's here, and so are incredible sales at Tanger Outlets. Find must-have handbags, footwear, and all the latest fall arrivals, all at unbeatable savings. Shop top brands like Nike Factory, Crocs, J. Crew Factory, Coach, Gap Factory, Old Navy Outlet, Under Armour, and even more brands you love. Save more every time you shop with deals up to 70% off. Tanger Outlets, always on trend, always on sale. Plan your trip at tanger.com.
At Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the stuff that actually happens in this movie. Where do you want to start, BJ?
Oh my God. So I love that our introduction to Slater King, Channing Tatum's character, is one of these nondescript apologies where it's like a famous, you know, powerful man who's like, I made a mistake and I'm learning and I'm being better and I'm sorry. And we have no idea what he did. And that's the thing, is I think that that speaks so powerfully to how often all of these like apologies from public figures sound exactly the fucking same, whether it's they said something racist on Twitter or they got busted for being a sex pest or they stole something. Like, it doesn't matter what they did. They all have the exact same canned apology. So kudos, Zoe Kravitz, for calling that shit out.
So then that comes back around at the end of the movie in a really interesting way, where Channing Tatum's character, once all the shit has hit the fan and like the jig is up and all of that, he has that moment where the camera just hangs on him and he's just like screaming the words, I'm sorry, over and over and over again.
Oh my God. It's so upsetting and brilliant.
I was going to say, like, I imagine that could be a divisive moment for people. It really worked for me. And I especially love the moment where the camera holds for a long take while he's doing this. And then right after he's done screaming, I'm sorry, he sort of like flips a switch and he's like, we good? Like, did that work for you basically? And he like changes his voice and his entire demeanor like so quickly, just to sort of underline what you're talking about of like the performative aspect of the apology. So I don't know, that stuff worked for me, that moment worked for me, but I could see people being like, uncomfortable because it's such a raw, intense moment. So what did you think about that moment?
Oh, I loved it. Like, it was one of those things where it was going on and I was like, I have two thoughts about this. One, this is absolutely going to be turned into like a reaction meme. There's no doubt about that. This that's going to be used everywhere once this movie hits VOD. But number two, it was so upsetting to sit there and have him basically just like scream pretty much at camera of him saying I'm sorry and then snap out of it as if nothing happened, because it is such a stark reminder that like I can't trust anybody when they say these things. Like, I just can't. And I think like he threw his whole body and soul into that performance. And, you know, he's engaged to Zoe Kravitz, so like all I can think about is her being on the other side of that camera, and it's like, woof. What an interesting dynamic this is.
Yeah, there's so many interesting, maybe not so many, but there's at least two interesting sort of meta elements of the movie. One of them is the relationship that Zoe Kravitz has with Channing Tatum and the fact that she has cast him in this role and she co-wrote this script. And so she's presumably like crafting this part with him in mind, or at least like maybe shaping, helping to shape the final performance as we see it. So that is just a really interesting dynamic. Yeah, the sort of power dynamic between the writer director / lead actor and the fact that they're in a real relationship. And then also the sort of meta aspect of Zoe Kravitz being a person who comes from an incredibly wealthy, privileged background. Her mom is Lisa Bonet and her dad is Lenny Kravitz, right? Mm-hmm. So that her choosing to make a movie about, eating the rich is too simplistic, but like a world of privilege and all the stuff that this movie is actually about. It's just fascinating for her to be the figure behind the camera telling this story. And I'm not trying to say that it like diminishes the movie or whatever. It's just like an interesting data point to analyze and talk about and whatever. So I don't know. Did you think about that at all when you were watching this
constantly
movie?
There's a couple other like meta things that I found very, very fascinating. So obviously Zoe Kravitz being somebody who has grown up her entire life surrounded by like wealth and power and privilege, and for her to basically be like, yeah, it's all awful. Like, it's a terrible thing. You should not aspire to be this, I thought was brilliant. And then also, like, you know, kind of touching on the film's ending a little bit, this idea that, like, if you're going to be in it, if you're going to be involved, you better take it down from the inside, I think is mm-hmm. phenomenal. And, like, you know, kind of meta commentary on kind of what she's doing with this movie. But Adria Arjona, who plays Sarah in this movie, she is currently dating Jason Momoa, who used to be with Zoe Kravitz's mom, Lisa Bonet, which I find very interesting that she's wow. also directing, like, it kind of goes to show, like, how healthy that family has always been, like, for as messy as Hollywood families tend to be. Like, they all seem to be, like, very cool with each other, which I love. So I thought that was cool. But the one that I, like, really am fixated on is that in all of, you know, this movie about being, you know, eat the rich and men in power are dangerous and big tech is dangerous and all of these things, it's mostly men, with the exception of one person, which is Stacy, played by Gina Davis. And I love that Gina Davis, who has become, you know, more than just an actor, she is, like, one of the biggest advocates for women directors and women in film and getting more women behind the camera and more women in, like, above the line positions behind the camera. She plays the woman who is enabling all of the men to do these things, mm-hmm. which I think is such brilliant, like, meta commentary. Like, only she could play this character and it be just as, like, juicy as it is, because you realize how many women are kind of corrupted into perpetuating the patriarchy and, you know, feeding into these systems because it gets them closer to power. You know, they don't want to, like, rise up with all the other women. They want to, like, just not be destroyed by all of the men. And so I thought casting her was genius.
Yeah. Yeah. And not only not be destroyed, but, like, benefit from it too. Like,
totally. You know,
she gets
Absolutely.
To have a pretty great life, it seems like, from the outside anyway. So that's a particularly wonderful piece of casting that, like, anybody who follows Gina Davis's career will have, like, an extra layer to chew on, you know, by seeing her in that role. And if people don't know that about her, then it's still just a great performance as is, but a little bit of extra juiciness to it if you know about that. So you mentioned Adria Arjona? I'm not sure how to pronounce
I've
her
never
name,
actually heard her name said out loud, so
yeah, I need to find a YouTube video where she says yeah, it herself. Same. That's my go-to. But anyway, the rest of the world seemed to adore her in Richard Linklater's Hitman earlier this year. I honestly didn't understand the praise for her in that movie because I didn't really think that her character had a ton to do there, but I loved her in this. And when she joined forces with Frida at the end, I was just like, I mean, not literally, but metaphorically pumping my fist mm-hmm. in the theater. I was just so excited to see the two of them sort of turn the tables on these jackasses. So the movie is so incredibly cathartic in that way. By the time things finally come to a head and Frida and Sarah understand, Sarah is the Adria Arjona character, they understand what is actually going on. They've ingested the venom and they like have had the wool pulled out away from their eyes, basically. And just the violence that comes with, like, the corkscrew through the hand and people getting mm-hmm. their heads bashed in. I was just like, man, this movie really, really cranked it up a notch. So I love that.
Yeah, so, like, when the big reveal happens that, like, you know, they've been drugged this entire time, the way that it is presented is, it's obviously it's a tough watch. I'm not going to, like, try to downplay that, but it is so brilliant to me. And, like, I know that that's a weird word to use given the context of it, but we have been seeing so much repetition up until this point of, like, the things they're doing day in and day out. And we're getting glimpses of it. And so we're formulating, like, this image in our head. So then when this reveal happens, it, like, completely corrupts all of that, which I think is such incredible commentary on how often people think, like, oh, I know exactly who this person is. I have an idea of who this friend is. And then you hear that they've done something horrific. And mm-hmm. now it puts literally every experience you've ever had with this person into a new light. And like, you have to recontextualize it. So I think the movie is so effective in doing that. And the commitment that all of, like, these women have to not just the pure terror of what's happening to them that they don't remember, but the look on their faces when they have realized what has been happening to them, like, haunting. Like, I have aphantasia. I do not have a mind's eye. Those images are burned in my brain. Like, they will absolutely come up in my dreams, and they have, where I just think of, like, especially, like, Liz Carabell, who plays Camilla, and True Mullen, who plays Heather. So they're, like, the two girls throughout this who are kind of, like, flighty and ditzy and having a good time. And to watch the light switch that happens with them when they've realized what's been happening to them, oh, my God, like... such great performances.
Yeah, those were the characters I was alluding to earlier, where I wish that I got to know them a little bit better beyond just like, woo, shots and whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, but I guess the movie has, it's a pretty short movie, all things considered. It's like, whatever, 100 minutes or something.
Right,
it
right.
It goes through a lot of stuff. So I guess it didn't really have time. I don't know. I wonder if like the movie might not have, it might have lost some of its potency if it stretched out to a full 2 hours or something like that, and you did get a little bit more backstory with those characters or something. So I don't know. I'm not sure if like I'm asking for something that I don't actually want in reality, but just as is, I kind of felt like, oh man, it would have been nice to learn a little bit more about them as people or whatever. But yeah, I mean, okay. So Channing Tatum, we've talked about him a little bit. I just thought he was equally good at being alluring and oppressive. There's a scene near the end where Frida has realized what's really going on, and she's trying to pretend that everything is still fine, where he pins her up against the wall and like leans in super close. And I just kept thinking, like, in another context, in a rom-com or something like that, that same movement could be perceived as romantic, but the way that Kravitz chooses to frame it here, it's almost inducing claustrophobia. And there are these Dutch angles in the shot reverse shot construction of the sequence that are so harsh, so strong with the twisting of the camera, that it's almost as if Frida is like on the ground and Slater is on top of her. So that was just one of many visual moments that stood out to me. I just wanted to call that out.
That, like, I love the decision she made. Also, like, because I don't think we've like fully like focused on her at all, but like Naomi Ackie as Frida is so good in this movie because she has such a difficult role as far as I'm concerned. And I love her. Like, I was so obsessed with her throughout this entire movie. But I'm so glad that you pointed out, like, in another context, this would be different, because that's so much what this movie is about. Like, it's a goofy comparison, but there's the like hello HR meme that I love to use in our Slack chat, which is that you could have one person, or two different people say the exact same thing, and depending on the intention behind what they're saying, it can either be like, oh, that's sweet, or oh my God, I'm calling HR. And like, that is what Channing Tatum is doing in this movie, where like everything that he does, it depends on your view. Like, who do you think Slater King is? If you think that he is genuinely this like philanthropic rich person who, you know, made a mistake and he's now a better person, then you think like, oh, he did this wonderful thing. He got, you know, these cocktail waitresses invited to his island and they're having fun and he's treating everybody and he's taking care of everybody. What a great guy. And then you know the truth about him and it's like everything that he did is manipulative. That's a manipulation tactic. None of that is truthful. None of that is deserving of praise. He's a bad person. Mm-hmm. And I just love that, because in a lot of instances, like in looking at it, he's actually not changing his performance. The movie's changing around him and the perspective is changing about who he is. And you realize like, oh, he's been the same guy this whole time. It's just how is he being presented?
Yeah, that's a good call. I was kind of expecting Kyle MacLachlan's character, who is his therapist in this movie, to be the person who is responsible for coming up with whatever this technology is that he's been able to synthesize into this perfume that makes these women forget things. Because there's a lot of conversations that Channing Tatum's character has about talking with Kyle MacLachlan and like forgetting being a gift and like memory and trauma and repression and all that kind of stuff. So I assumed for some reason, I guess based on that type of dialogues peppered throughout the movie, that Kyle MacLachlan was going to be the genius mastermind behind this whole thing. And then he kind of seems like he's just another participant in it, really. It as the movie goes on, you find out that he's one of the people who assaults Frida as the in one of these periods where she's her memory is being wiped, you know. Mm-hmm. But Yeah, I was just kind of surprised that that revelation never came about. And I guess because Channing Tatum is supposed to be this sort of whatever tech billionaire mogul type of guy, that like the implication is that he somehow stumbled across this technology and sort of was able to put this all together himself. So anyway, just wanted to clock that.
Yeah, so I have a couple of theories on this. Is I don't know if you've ever had to deal with these kinds of people, but I unfortunately have, of people who treat therapy as a game to be won. And so I absolutely think that Slater King is the kind of guy that met with his therapist and, you know, he talks about, you know, my sister remembers everything and I don't remember a lot of things. And his therapist being like, well, you know, forgetting can be a gift, like, because that is true. Like your memory blocking things out or, you know, blacking out trauma is a way of your brain trying to protect you. That is factual. So instead of Slater King being like, oh, that's interesting, that's a great way for my body to protect me, his impulse is, well, I have to make that true for everybody and also profit off of this. So now I'm going to become fixated on this. And this is going to be my new thing, because if people don't remember their trauma, then they can be very productive. Like ultimately, this is like about somebody who's so like red-pilled by capitalism that he turns like a natural like protective agent that's in our brains to protect us from trauma and finds a way to not only weaponize it but profit off of it. It is so gross. And then the fact that he brings Rich into the equation is him very much be like, did I do it? Did I win therapy? I did it, right? Like that is how I view that character. And the fact that Rich then like goes on with it is because he's just a piece of shit. Like I think that there are unfortunately a lot of bad people, and I think that if you are the kind of person that caters exclusively to billionaires, you're probably also a piece of shit.
Okay, so one of the other things that I thought while watching this movie, I thought that the film had several marks of an exploitation film. And right after we got home, my wife and I were talking about that. And I was like, you know what? I don't actually know what the real definition of an exploitation movie is. And she looked it up and we spent like 20 minutes talking about all the different examples and genres and subgenres, and basically determined that, as described on the internet anyway, the term exploitation film is technically so broad and encompasses so many different types of movies that it basically ceases to be useful at all. But I wondered what you thought about that term and whether Blink Twice qualifies as an exploitation movie.
So I 100% agree with this conversation. Exploitation films are my favorite like genre of films. I am very, very into exploitation films. But you are right. Exploitation films, that is an umbrella term, because underneath that, you can have everything from like rape revenge films to spaghetti westerns. Like those are all considered under that same banner. So I think that the term like exploitation film is both misunderstood and overused, because I think a lot of people don't understand like the point of an exploitation film is, yes, to exploit something, but it doesn't necessarily mean it's being done so in a nefarious manner. Like there are exploitation films that exist that are clearly meant to just profit off of shock value. That is very, very real. But a lot of exploitation films are actually trying to say something. And so I think that Blink Twice absolutely falls under the umbrella of exploitation film, even though it is a lot harder to do exploitation films in our like current era, because we try so hard not to exploit things. We try very hard not to be exploitative of people or issues that exist in the world. But every once in a while, we'll get a movie like Blink Twice, or we'll get a movie like The Perfection from a few years ago that is also an exploitation film, where what you have to understand is like they are making commentary on something that is very real, but it is presented in a way that is either so extreme that it like crosses the line into feeling like this is not within the realm of possibility, or in a way that is so big that it then allows the audience to have somewhat of a safe distance away from what is being presented on screen. This is why like Nazi-sploitation films and Schindler's List are completely different, despite them both being about similar subjects.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. And yeah, I think that's a great point. And yeah, it was fascinating to like look at the Wikipedia page for exploitation movie and just think about all of the movies that could technically qualify under that gigantic umbrella that it lays out. But yeah, thinking about it in terms of like sort of as a companion piece, this movie as a companion piece to something like The Perfection is, it's just really fascinating. For me, it was like the heightened colors and the lurid violence, and like it kind of speaks to what makes horror and sci-fi and I guess all genre great in its way, where like you can have this heightened or extreme version of a story that may seem a little ridiculous on its face, but when it gets to real issues, as this movie does in a myriad of ways across the story, it provides room for the audience to engage with real ideas and real things that are happening in our actual world. So that's very simplistic and like everybody probably knows that, but it's just watching Blink Twice made me think about that in stark terms in a way where most movies don't. So
something else that I think is helpful is, you know, there's that great Garth Marenghi's Dark Place meme that's like, I know writers who use subtext and they're all cowards. There's no subtext usually in exploitation films. They are putting it on Front Street where they're like, yeah, this movie is about sexual violence and how awful men are, and this is what we're doing with it. Like, yeah, that is very much on Front Street. It's not subtle. It's not hinted at. It is very much in your face and textual. And something that is fascinating, but I will say that Mr. Joe Bob Briggs agrees with me on this. Do you know where we get most like modern exploitation films?
No, I don't.
Lifetime. And I'm like being deadly serious.
Lifetime. Oh yeah, you've said this before.
Yes. Lifetime original movies or movies on the Lifetime Movie Network are the closest thing that we have to like the exploitation films of the 1970s in terms of how they are presenting their violence, how they're presenting their storylines, like the over, you know, the over-exaggerated situations. Like, it is very much exploitation cinema, but like, you know, distilled for TV audiences. But like, you can make direct through lines from like Russ Meyer movies and David Dakota's entire series of, we call them the Wrong universe, because he has made like 50 films for a Lifetime where it's like the wrong teacher, the wrong stepfather, the wrong sister, the wrong nanny. And it's all of them, and they're all different people and they have nothing to do with each other. Just that somebody's wrong in this situation and they're going to like cause hell for it. Like Blink Twice is definitely like the wrong billionaire. Like they all feel like they can fit together. It's exploitation, baby. Yeah.
Okay. So as we get to the end here, I wanted to talk to you about the very end of this movie where I thought there was going to be kind of a traditional rape revenge structure to this story where Frieda's character leaves Slater in the burning wreckage of his building. And the movie doesn't do that. Zoe Kravitz decides to take things a step further. She saves him. And then we find out that Frieda has married Slater and is using his own technology to oppress him. And she's taken over his company at the end of the movie. So what did you make of the ending of this movie? And what did you think about how the whole thing played out there?
So I know that this ending is going to be very controversial because there are going to be a lot of people that just want her to like burn it down, like, and leave it at that. I personally kind of love that she's not being the bigger person here. She's not like, well, this was horrible, but I've burned it down and I've ended it, and now I can move on to start a new life. She's like, no, you exploited me for years. You hurt my friends. Like, you killed my friends. I'm going to steal all of your money. And not only am I going to steal all of your money and all of your acclaim, I am going to change your entire company and make it something better, and I'm going to profit off of it, and I'm going to use this technology against you to keep you compliant, because fuck you. You do not deserve nice things. Like, yeah.
And you don't deserve an easy death either.
Exactly. Like, that's the thing, because killing him, that is easy. She's making him suffer. She's making him, you know, be tortured through this. And, you know, here's like the unwritten thing. I am not, you know, ever going to track down the people who have assaulted me in my life and like murder them and steal their house. Like, I'm not going to do that. That's not what I'm going to do. There is a sense of wish fulfillment here in that I love that this is a movie that is not requiring her to like turn the other cheek and be a good person and show that she's better than them. No, he went low and she dragged his ass to hell. And like, I love that because we don't let women be that angry and like explore what that feels like. Like, it feels like sometimes we even require, you know, there's like the model minority myth, which is usually attributed to people from marginalized groups, but like women are still a marginalized group. And so to see her not fall into the model minority thing of like, oh, I'm better than him, and being like, no, I'm better than you, and here's how I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna destroy you at your own game, because that's gonna hurt you. That will hurt you way more than me killing you. Killing you is a kindness. I'm obsessed with this ending.
Yeah, it's really great and super cathartic, and cathartic on multiple levels, because like she also has compiled enough evidence to have Rich arrested by the end. So all of it just kind of comes together in this really wonderful way. So
she's taking them down by fighting in their own arena, which I think is great. Like, she's not bringing them to the island and killing them all off. And she's like, no, I'm publicly humiliating you. I am ruining you in the public eye so that you cannot start over. And I think that that's great. Like,
yeah, and then she has a seat at the table at the very end too. In this,
she
this
owns
area.
The table. Like, yeah. It's her table now.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, well, great stuff. Any other closing thoughts on Blink Twice before we wrap it up here?
Yeah, I just love this movie. I thought it was really interesting. A character we didn't talk about that I think is super interesting, one that I can't stop thinking about, is Levon Hawke as Lucas, because he is somebody that we've shown as like being drugged along with the women. And I think that there's two very interesting things happening there. Is that one, I think it's like, once again, the fact that like so many men in power view gay men as a bridge between men and women and not actually as men, which is like horrific in its own right. But the fact that he feels like the true test of all of this, because they're presenting him as like this tech wunderkind. So they're very clearly seeing like how his productivity changes based on what he can and cannot remember. Which is doubly fucked up to really think about, where it's like, oh, they're torturing all these women to like make sure that the serum works. But ultimately, like, their torture and like their abuse is really the test for Lucas, because that's what they actually care about, is whether or not he can continue to be a tech wunderkind despite enduring all of this stuff. And like, so that lives in my head rent free too.
Yeah. And he's also the character that at the very end of the movie, Channing Tatum is like putting the moral weight of the film on his shoulders by saying like, you're bearing witness to this thing that I'm doing. Are you actually going to do anything about it? And
right.
I don't know. That's a really rich line of storytelling. And I'm not sure that the movie really had enough time or space to dig into that in like a super satisfying way, but I appreciated that it was brought up anyway. So yeah, anyway, good stuff there. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Okay. Yeah. Really enjoyed this movie. I think it's like one of my favorites of the year, honestly. It's there's just so much to it.
Yeah. It was my big surprise. Like, I hadn't, like, I was not anticipating anything, and this is obviously no shade to Zoe Kravitz, but like, because I hadn't heard anything about it, I was like, I don't know, is this like, you know, just like a celebrity vanity project? Like, what's going on here? And then watching it, I was like, oh no, she's got the juice. Like, this is really good.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I can't wait to see what she does next. I don't know if she has any other projects that she's working on or anything like that, but I'm very excited to track her behind the camera as well as in front of it. So that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find BJ's review of Blink Twice up on slashfilm.com, as well as that piece that she mentioned that'll be up on the site. If not when you're listening to this, then certainly like in the next couple days. I think there's going to be like an ending explained article up on the site too. So stay tuned for more of that at slashfilm.com. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That really does help us out a lot. Tell your friends about the show any way you can. Thanks so much for listening, and we will talk to you all next week.
This podcast is brought to you by the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection Arcade Classics. 7 legendary titles, including X-Men vs. Street Fighter and Marvel vs. Capcom 2. Enjoy new features like online multiplayer, training, and gallery modes. Plus, join in on the action with one-button specials, where players of all skill levels can unleash those epic moves with ease. Relive the classic arcade battles. Get your hands on the Marvel vs. Capcom Fighting Collection today. Available now on PlayStation 4, PC, and Nintendo Switch.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.